Welcome to Novelist Spotlight. This is Mike Consul, your host. In addition to being the host of this podcast and interviewing novelists, I am a novelist myself. I have three published novels. My latest is titled Lolita Firestone, a supernatural novel, and it is set in Sedona, Arizona and Cairo, Egypt. My previous novel is titled Family Recipes, a novel about Italian culture, Catholic guilt, and the culinary crime of the century. And my first novel is named Hardwood, a novel about college basketball and other games young men play. And that story deals with issues ranging from depression and racism to sex, religion, and university politics. All three novels are listed in the episode notes. I hope you will buy them, I hope you will read them, and I hope you will thoroughly enjoy them. Now, on with our program.
In the spotlight is romance novelist Audrey Carlin, number one New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal bestselling author. And I said number one. If you know anything about bestsellers, you don't have to sell that many books to be a bestseller, really. But when you're number one bestseller, that's a whole different ballgame. So always make that distinction. She writes stories that help readers find themselves while falling in love and hopefully having good sex at the same time. Some of her works include the worldwide phenomenon Calendar Girl series, the Trinity series, the International Guy series, 1001 Dark Nights series, the Marriage Auction series. She's productive and she's got some series there. I suspect they're going to be on Netflix one of these days. She lives in California. And by the way, her books have been translated into more than 30 languages. And she lives in California with her two children and the love of her life. When she's not writing, you can find her doing up dog, down dog, warrior stances, king dancer pose. She's a yoga instructor, which is something we have in common. I'm not an instructor, but I've been doing yoga for 40 years. So there's plenty to talk about there. We'll stick to books, though. She also can be found sipping wine with her soul sisters or with her nose stuck in a sexy romance novel. We'll find a little bit out about what Audrey likes to read when she's not writing her own material. Audrey Carlin, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. My goodness, what an intro. I appreciate you.
I've been looking forward to this. You're, again, so productive and you've been so successful at what you do. Who is the love of your life? Let's start there. Tell us about him or her, and does he or she fuel your romance writing?
Yeah, you know what? I think so. Eric is his name, and we've been together since I was 18. I am turning 45 in a couple weeks. So he
is a track record.
My Prince Charming. And, you know, I love him just as much today as I did the day I married him. And
what is the secret to a strong relationship, a strong and enduring relationship?
Honestly, I know it sounds really boring, but communication to us is really key. I'm a very energetic, excitable worrywart, and he is a very chill and calm, collected guy. And so it, you know, I think we have almost like an opposites attract, but our morals and values are the same, which I think really connects us. And then we talk about everything. It can, and women love to talk, we do. And sometimes men do too, but for the most part, I think that women are pretty gabby. And I like to tell him everything the second he gets home, because I work from home, I'm all by myself here until the kids get out of school. So the second that man walks in the door, he gets, you know, the whole day in one go.
Does he sometimes pick up one of your manuscripts that you're working on and start reading and say, whoa, that's me?
You know what's funny? He said that we were interviewed by the Today Show a few years ago, and when Calendar Girl was at its height of success, and he said he believed all my book boyfriends were him and with various names and likenesses. And you know, I guess you could say he's not wrong in the sense that, you know, it's been he and I for 26 years, so there's a little bit of truth to that. But so he, part, you know, my imagination is vast.
So he does see himself in the books. And do you ever ask him, do you ever role play? I'm working on a scene, and this is a scene, and I need you to be this guy, and I'm going to be this woman. And do you ever role play a scene?
No, It's more like, I mean, obviously, if you're writing, for one, if you're writing a spicy scene, knowing where hands, arms, legs, body parts go, that's really important to making it a visual that the reader can imagine. So that can play into it sometimes, but for the most part, I'm usually asking him, would a guy say this? Because I am a female writing both in male and female, point of views. And sometimes I'm uncertain as to whether or not it feels truth or genuine. And so I will ask him for feedback on dialogue for the most part.
What do you see as your obligation to your readers? What do they expect you to deliver and you seek to deliver to your readers?
Excellent question. Thank you for asking that. I really appreciate that because I think every author has to have their little special niche. And I think mine tends to be sisterhood is a really powerful message that I always want women to feel and experience when reading my work. I feel like we are all, on this spinning rock together, and we should be kind and try to lift each other up. And so that's always something I try to a message I try to put in my books. So you're going to get a bit of sisterhood. You're always going to get a happily ever after. And I really genuinely want my readers to kind of escape into a journey that feels like something that's realistic, but like it's their best friends and they get something out of it. And that's why my tagline is, that you are falling in love while finding yourself is because you're going to learn a life message or something that relates to who you are in this moment in time. Hopefully, that's the goal, anyways. And ideally, that would make that book more special to you, and it would connect you to, we would connect each other to each other.
So who are your readers? How well do you know your readers? I mean, the stereotype about romance novels is women and gay men read romance novels. Is that how close to the truth is that? But obviously different romance writers have a different demographic or psychographic, let's say. Who are your readers?
I definitely think my readers are primarily women. I think when we had done some studies before, it was like 90% women, 10% male, and how many of that 10% were gay is up for debate. But I think that there is primarily women that are in the ages of 20 to probably 65 are my primary demographic because my characters can range in the 20s to the 30s, and that's a typical time in people's lives where they either are living it now, are looking forward to that age, or they remember it well. And so the stories seem like something they could have experienced themselves in most cases. So I have a definitely a large demographic, and I don't write to any specific group of women. I just write what's in my soul during each manuscript.
You trust your instincts,
I do.
and people have responded to that. So you
Yeah.
largely write for yourself. You know what your readership wants, but
Yes.
it's
I think
coming.
the newest thing is the with the Marriage Auction, that's my longest series now that has been running on Kindle Vella's new platform for the last 2.5 years. Those are primarily very young readers. So they're in the 18 to 25 range, and they gobble up serialized romance like it's candy. And so I've been writing primarily to that group of people for quite a while now, and it is refreshing. It's almost harder in a way because I am 45, so it's like going back in time a little. But they're the most voracious readers. They're the ones that got a little bit more time on their hands. You got the busy moms that are in their 30s who are, trying to catch an audiobook when they can in between kid pickups and home projects and cooking dinner. Same with the men. It just depends on what their home life is like, but primarily that 20 to 65 is my sweet spot.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it's great to hear that young people are reading because it's kind of the cliche these days or the common wisdom or conventional wisdom is that young people don't read. Well, it's not exactly true,
Yeah.
and not only that, but you're really laying track for your future readers. I mean, they're going to age right along with you and read your stuff right to the end.
That's definitely the goal.
So, my first experience with a romance novel, when I was a kid, I have three older sisters. One of them liked to read Rosemary Rogers novels, and There was one in particular. I remember the title, Sweet Savage Love, again by Rosemary Rogers. And I was a teenage boy. It was a total turn on. She wrote great sex scenes.
Nice.
And what makes a great sex scene in your estimation? You write sex scenes. What do you think really works?
That is my most favorite thing to write. And you know what? It's funny because my friends will consider me kind of prudy. Like, I don't wear revealing clothing. I'm not a person who is raunchy in one way or another. I don't really go out of my way to promote sexuality in that regard outside of my books. And I feel like everybody should have that healthy sexual, urges in life, and sex is a part of life. It's very passionate. So when you're writing erotic scenes, the most important thing for any author is to write what the characters are feeling. Don't show what's happening. It's that age-old story of show, don't tell. We want to show them that they're experiencing this to the fullest. And I want to turn my readers on. I absolutely want them to feel aroused. If they want to turn around and have a little fun time with their significant other, then I did an even better job, But for the most part, it's that pivotal moment with couples when they finally take that ultimate step towards intimacy. I think it's so powerful. And to do it right, you've got to get in the head of those characters on what their feelings are, what they're experiencing in that moment. You can't just say, he thrust inside her. That's not going to work. It's got to be
Only
that.
if it's revenge sex, right?
Yeah. Well, then it's kind of like, hate sex would be a little bit more hard, I guess.
About makeup sex? You must have some makeup sex type
I've definitely
scenes.
written some makeup sex. Makeup sex is super fun, especially if they're kind of fighting and fucking. I don't know. Shoot, should I not say the F word on
No,
here?
it's okay. It's okay. Kids aren't going to listen to this.
Okay. Well, I was trying to like hold my tongue with what I say because sometimes I'm a sailor, but it's a matter of, you've got that fight and fuck characters. You've got, the enemies to lovers are super fun to write. Then you want to write the sweet moments where, there's that time where in a relationship, couples are actually making love. And what does that look like? And usually that deals with a lot more emotion than anything else. So make sure that you're using all your five senses when you're writing. What are they seeing? What are they feeling? What are they tasting, smelling, hearing? All of those things, if you can add that into each sex scene, it's going to be far more powerful to the reader.
So a romance author, Eva Lee, who has been on the podcast, I asked her what position is the most common, and she said woman on top doing cowgirl. Do you concur, or do you have a different most prominent or most common position with your characters?
I would say no. If you know what, I love to write it. I have a big thing with authors that write sex scenes in a book and kind of repeat the same position. That does irk me because I think you need a little variety in your spice. But you know what? It's all about what mine are typically weird locations. That's my most fun. Like closet. I think I just read a closet sex scene the other day, and it was like wicked hot. My betas were like, dang, girl, you were in a mood. And I was like, well, sometimes it goes there. And you also have to decide, are you going to layer it with a little bit of filthy language? Is there going to be dirty talk? Is there going to be a little raunch? What word choices? Like, I personally don't like to use certain words that often. I like to use euphemisms for different words. But the raunchier words can hit quite right if it's
Yeah.
right
Especially if
scene.
you use them sparingly, right? I mean, if you use them
Yes.
sparingly, then they have impact.
Yes. And the my biggest irk or pet peeve when it comes to writing erotic romance, when you're getting a little gritty and you're using words like ejaculate, instead, if you use cum and you call it C-O-M-E or C-U-M, like use it correctly. One is a thing, and one is the act of. So get it right. Don't say, I'm gonna see you in. Like, I'm gonna come. I'm gonna see you in. That's immediately takes me out of the scene. And all I can think is your editor sucks. So be very, very thoughtful about your word choices and the ick factor, because there is. We've got these landmines with so many readers. And they don't like words like moist, which I don't care. It doesn't bother me. They don't like words like What was the last one someone said? Oh, knot. They called the, I think they called the clit a knot. And I was like,
Yes,
I probably used it. I don't know.
yeah, well, everybody's got their thing, but you make a good point about staying, keeping the reader engaged, keeping them in the
In the
spell.
scene.
You don't knock them out of that spell.
Well, exactly. And don't take them out of it. Like, don't start having the characters think about something differently while they're having sex because you've just removed them from the scene. Or don't have them remembering a different time while they're having sex. You ruined it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. Now, conversely, Anne Gracie, the Australian romance novelist who also has been on this podcast, told me that, and I forget if she said she's written or I know that she's read as some of her favorite romance novelists, that the characters don't even exchange so much of a kiss between the protagonist or the protagonist and antagonist. I mean, that sounds kind of boring to me if
Now
I'm
that's
reading.
boring to me. That's the next level insta love, man.
Yeah, I mean, even with I don't know if you're old enough to remember Moonlighting.
I love that was one of my favorite shows of all time.
Well,
Sybil
you remember the
Shepherd
sexual tension between
is like the sexiest
Sybil
woman
Shepherd
in
and Bruce Willis. And did they
the
eventually
world. It did. It took
consummate?
years for them to get to that point.
Yeah, and it was that tension was terrific, but it would have been a big letdown if the whole series had run and they never got together, that they
Yeah,
never
exactly. Like
consummated, so to speak.
you eventually, I will say as a reader, because I'm an avid reader, I read probably 3 books a week. And if I'm reading a romance scene and I'm at like 70% of the book and they haven't kissed or done anything, the book is not going to probably be a reread.
Now, if you're writing as much as you write, you it's not just romance necessarily. I mean, you pick the romance genre, but you could have written other genres or just general fiction. Why romance versus other? Even if you decided, look, I want to make money doing this, so I'm going to pick a genre and a top-selling genre. There's other top-selling genres. Why romance?
You know, I'm in love with love, Mike. It's when someone is in love and have that partner and the first blush of love, it's such an exciting time for any woman, man, just that giddy feeling of you can't wait to talk to them, to see them again. You can't, you know, they send you a text and your heart starts pounding. They call you and butterflies, you know, take flight in your stomach. Those feelings are so powerful, and I love playing with them. I love meet cutes. I love writing that experience where they meet the first time. I love writing. I would say the hardest thing to write is the first kiss. That is honestly in romance to me the hardest because that's
In what
the.
respect?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, I said, in what respect? Is it the lead up
You
to
know, I
it,
think
or
there's
is
so
it the
much.
actual act?
Yeah, there's so much weighing on that moment. You've got to get it just right for it to feel as though the characters had this amazing moment in their life. And just think about all the kisses you've had, your first kisses, and the ones that truly just shook you to your core. That's the feeling I love chasing in romance.
Yeah. Now you bring up a point. You're talking about that first blush of love and or even just lust with another person, but people are expected to get married and be in long term. Typically they want traditional relationships where it's just us and there's no going outside this relationship. You will never have that experience again. Yes, you'll have a great husband or wife and you're going to have great times together and this great track record together and all that. But that's one of the things people kind of walk away from when they say, I'm going to get married and it's going to be a monogamous relationship or even just long-term dating.
Yeah, you're committing to something for a long time and forever ultimately. When I mean it depends on the relationship. I'm fine with other people having, you know, not getting married, having non-monogamous relationships. I'm not okay with it in my personal life. It's not for me, but I definitely wouldn't judge any others who wanted to have that type of experience in their world. We only get one life, so we need to live it true to ourselves.
Okay, you don't
And
believe in
so,
reincarnation.
I mean, I,
We've scratched that one off.
yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not
But
against.
you reincarnate the love, the start of a love relationship through you live vicariously through
And
your
maybe that's why
characters.
women are so eager to read romance, is because many of them are either chasing their forever or they found it already and they love revisiting that time and that excitement in a way that isn't, taking them away from their partner in life.
Good point. Now, let me ask you this. When did you know you wanted to write, and when did you know you wanted to write romance?
Yeah, see, I'm old. I'm 40. I'm gonna turn 45, like I said, in
Oh,
a
you're
couple
making me
weeks.
feel really old
Well,
now.
I didn't even release my first novel until I was 34. And so you really can start anytime. Look at Martha Stewart. I mean, she started her company at like 50 and she's like a global brand. So you can start writing anytime you want. Sky's the limit. There is no age. I definitely feel as though you have to, take the time to do your studies, do your research, figure out what your voice is as a writer, and make that happen. I started out as a self-published author because I was terrified of rejection. I wanted to do it for fun at first. I was really excited about it. I had a full-time job. I had two babies at home, and this was my fun, and it turned into my dream. And so that could happen for anybody. Absolutely anybody. If you want to build your dream, don't let anybody stop you from doing that.
But
Just
what triggered you?
what
So
triggered
you're
me?
not
50 Shades
until
of Grey.
you didn't publish. I'm
Yeah.
sorry, go ahead.
It was 50 Shades of Grey triggered me. I've always been a writer in general, like in my jobs, I was always the person that wrote all of the copy edits, the marketing, the letters, that kind of thing. And English and language usage came very easily to me, as well as in written format. So I was always one who loved to write, but I did it for fun. I wrote a little fan fiction here and there, and I wrote for work, wrote for friends. But it was reading 50 Shades of Grey for the first time, and I was late to that game. I didn't probably read it until it was 2 years out, maybe 2 or 3 years out. And it changed my life because I read that book. It was the first erotic book I'd ever read. And the love story was so beautiful to me. The heat level made me feel some type of way. And
Did
I
that give you
was just
permission to write the stuff you wanted to write, or
like,
since this was your
yeah,
first? Okay, because that
I'd
was,
never read it before. And so I was shocked that this was a thing. And I was just like, wow, I had dabbled in reading like some historical romances, but it had never been at the level to which 50 Shades was. I was mostly like a suspense reader and thriller reader before I decided to pick up 50 Shades of Grey. And I think it was Dared, actually. I had read Elizabeth Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love, and that changed my life. I was like, wow, this woman's incredible. This story, that journey is so beautiful, women's fiction. And then someone dared me to read 50 Shades of Grey, and I was like, psh, I can read that, whatever. I read it. All three immediately stopped, turned around, read it all three again because I was like, no way did I just read this like really life-changing thing to me. And then I looked into the author, E.L. James, and she was a corporate mom, just like I was, had two boys at home. She was writing fan fiction, Twilight fan fiction for fun. And it turned into this big thing that changed her whole life. And I was like, well, if she's just like me and can do it, why can't I? And now I never thought that I'd have anywhere near the success as her. And have anything I'd ever written be written in other languages or have had a movie about them, with passion flicks. But I just wanted to be me and try something new. And I was inspired by her. And so I wrote my first book, Angel Falling, and I sent it to everybody that I could to get feedback. I took writing classes and I put myself out there and it worked. It was by the time I had written, self-published six full-length novels and six novellas of Calendar Girl, I was approached by a publisher to buy my entire backlist and anything else I was going to write for like 3 to 4 years. So I signed a 27 book deal with that publisher at the time.
So
And
you're a crackerjack marketer then. You marketed your books. You're very effective with marketing, correct?
I don't feel like I am now. I feel like I, had really great publishing houses that knew what to do with me and my work. I'm all about just the craft in writing and storytelling. So marketing doesn't come as naturally to me as I would hope it would. It's hard. It's easier to market your friends' work, like talk about books I love, than it is to share my own.
But the publisher approached you because your books were selling, correct? So was it strictly that you got discovered? I mean, it wasn't you obviously did some marketing, but was it just that you hit a vein with readers? They
I
discovered your
did.
name.
Calendar Girl specifically, it was, and that's kind of what I'm known for is the serial writing. It's not just series, it's serial. It's taking a person or a couple or couples and bringing them through a very vast journey. And so Calendar Girl is four full-length novels, all told from the perspective of one woman, and they're each 450 plus pages. So
Those are big romance novels. That's a lot of pages.
yeah, it's a lot of pages. And
And so that was a
that,
series of four.
yes, so there's nobody else in that serial. It's just Mia and her journey in those four full-length novels. And then when after that I wrote International Guy, did it from a male's perspective, four full-length novels. And now I've got The Marriage Auction, which is in seasons. I'm calling them seasons because they're very episodic, but it's following four couples and it runs over four full-length novels. So it just, that's serial, you kind of find your niche. And I'm good at having an arc that not only is for each person, but for the story itself and going over a long length of time. I like to call my work right now like a filthy soap opera. And you're going to get that Days of Our Lives feeling moment with the wild, suspense and hot sex and love and romance all in one.
So International Guy was from a male perspective, and so your character in International Guy is who?
His name is Parker Ellis. He is what's called the dream maker. And there's the love maker, money maker, and dream maker. They're a team of three guys that own a business together. And basically, they aid women in solving really random, weird problems, such as the first novella that is in the International Guy series is a perfume heiress. And she's very young, she's smart, intelligent, but she needs a little bit of a confidence boost in taking over this massive, company, kind of like a Lancôme or, Yves Saint Laurent, something like that. And they basically show her that she's every bit as sexy, every bit as confident, every bit as intelligent as every other CEO in that sector. And, there's sexy time there with her and Parker, because why not? And but that's all it was. It wasn't love, it was lust, it was fun, it was exciting. He helped her find herself, and in turn, he made a lot of money. So,
Now,
then
is
the
that a
second one, he does a an actress. He helps an actress, with her problems. So it's just every different novella within the whole is him helping different people with random, very strange problems. So it's interesting. It's very hot. And I think women connected more with Calendar Girl than with International Guy because it was told from a female perspective versus the male perspective. And that matters. That matters when you're writing, but
Right, they
when
want to see
you're
themselves
on the
in it,
right side.
right? Yeah. Well, they could have seen themselves in International Guy too, I suppose. But the series International Guy, did I get that right? What's the title of the series again? Is it International Guy?
Because he travels the world.
How many in the series?
There is 12 novellas within the four full-length novels, and it's the same with Calendar Girl.
Okay, I see. Now you also have the Marriage Auction series, which you say appeals to a little bit younger audience. Give us the premise there.
Okay, Marriage Auction is a bit more taboo because the concept is women and men both enter themselves into clandestine auction for the highest bidder for marriage. So the contract details are you will marry them for a period of 3 years, no less than 3 years. It can continue on if you guys fall in love and move on or not. Each woman puts themselves in the auction for a specific reason, mostly money, but there's reasons behind why they need that money. And the men either bid on them or they have put themselves in the auction as well. The first season has four women. The second season has three women and a male. So I started with women because obviously they're my bread and butter, and I wanted to tell the right story the way and get people hooked before I added in the male perspective. And what I do is I tell the story from both the female and the male, the bidder and the candidate. So, for example, the first character, Ruby, she's She's down on her luck. She's a stripper from, I think, Mississippi, if I can remember. It's been a bit. And she's, she just wants to make a ton of cash to help put her really intelligent sister through an Ivy League college and change their lives. And she gets bit on by two twin brothers who both want her for different reasons. And they're trying to get a wife to meet an inheritance clause on their family's holdings. So they decide to woo her and into deciding who she's going to marry for sure. So it's kind of fun to have the two brothers vying for the same woman. Then you've got two sisters that I put in the auction that are from Montana. They want to save their family's land. They're having a very Hatfields and McCoy situation with the neighbor ranch. And so, of course, I had to make the neighbor rancher purchase the neighbor so that we
Right.
can have some serious enemies to lovers situation happening. And that tends to be the reader's favorite couple so far. I think Dakota and Sutton are winning it at the being the favored. And it's, you got that cowgirl vibe and, the alpha male, so that's fun to play with. And there's more behind all the scenes, that's going on. Everybody has a rationale and reason for being in it, and that comes out throughout the journey. And they fall in love throughout the journey, which is really fun to write, is trying to get those people who supposedly hate each other to fall in love. Then you've got the people that left a life that they really loved because they felt like they had no other choice. So, there's a lot of trauma and heartache in some of the candidates that have entered into this auction. And, they find their happily ever after as well. It's just a really cool experience to play with for me. And the readers have been gobbling it up. So it has, I think, over 2.5 million reads in Kindlevella. So I'm excited.
You should be. You should be. I mean, romance novels have been big for a long time, but if you look at television these days, you see Married at First Sight, The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, Love is Blind, and the list just goes on from there. A lot of spin-off shows and fusion shows and so on. I would imagine a lot of those people, primarily women, watch those programs, but not entirely. I watch them. I love them. They are probably a good good portion of your readership, or likely to be, I
It's
shouldn't say a
never
good portion, but at
possible.
least
My
likely to be your
agent brought
readers.
it up literally the other day. She's like, "Do you watch Love is Blind or something like that?" And I go, "Actually, no. I don't watch a lot of TV because I read so much. So it's, I choose the I read like probably 3 hours a night. That's my wind down time. That's my, it's like my reward for a long good day. And sometimes I watch TV, but yeah, there's all those shows and. And if they find a piece of that connection in what I'm writing, that's freaking awesome for me.
So when you're, well, first of all, before I move on, I do want to ask you about 1001 Dark Night, the 1001 Dark Night series of novels. What is the premise
They are
there?
so cool. So the 1001 Dark Nights is this really cool imprint off of Blue Box Press Publishing. And it's their imprint. They've been doing it for a decade. And my dream when I first came out was to be with 1001 Dark Nights because all my favorite authors had one of their books with this specific imprint. And I was like, all right, you've made it if you can get in with 1001 Dark Nights. So when Marriage Auction was doing so well on Kindlevella, my agent was like, okay, are we going to indie publish this or do you want me to shop it out? And I was like, well, I don't want to lose the Vella readership. So I want to control the narrative, which I contacted the owners of Blue Box Press. I cold contacted them. They're very awesome women. Liz Barry, she's married to Steve Barry, the novelist who's always in the New York Times. He's amazing, super guy. And Jillian Steinfeld and MJ Rose, who's also an author. And they're a three women company, and they only hire authors they want to work with that they feel they can connect with their brand, grow their own marketing, and can kind of flow with the other labels they've connected with the other authors. So, because it's kind of a sisterhood, we support each other. They send out notices saying, hey, Skye Warren has a book out this week. If you wouldn't mind, giving some love, that'd be awesome. They're not pushy. And we all support each other. So, I was super excited to reach out to them. I was like, hey, guys, have this series called The Marriage Auction. They're like, yep, we know. I was like, well, I need to publish it. And I don't want to do the work. I just don't. I could save a lot of money and make more probably doing it myself. But these women are so savvy, so smart. And they were willing to let me keep my story in Kindlevella and still make money off that while they're producing the books. So they came with me. We worked together. We did a big old campaign and we released all four books at the same time. And so, as part of that deal, I agreed to write a 1001 Dark Nights. And now, what they are is novellas that give you basically the voice of the author, the vibe of the author, how their writing works. And it's like a taste of a story within a world that you're already writing in. So I wrote Madame Alanna, which she is the auctioneer. She is the owner of the marriage auction. So what I did was I worked with them to write her story separate from the marriage auction as a spinoff. So if people wanted to read Madame Alanna's journey, they very well could through this other source and learn about my writing. And if they liked it, maybe they'll go read The Marriage Auction. Maybe they'll go read one of my other books. And that's really the hope of 1001 is that you will read one of their novellas and then want to go read that author's entire backlist.
Gotcha.
And they
Gotcha.
are one of the most, and they'll tell you this, their publishing terms are you get 50, I get 50. And that's higher than any other publisher I've ever worked with. So getting 50% of all your sales, and that's excluding marketing budget. They do not add their budget into that contract. They will do a budget outside of the royalties. You don't pay that back, which a lot of companies require. So, and it's kind of hard to get in. They only do, I want to say they only do two a month usually. So like 20 something a year, maybe. And getting in with them is not easy. But once you are, they're like sisterhood. They literally are like your family.
So, how many novels in total have you written, Audrey?
Okay, with the four that I'll be releasing probably in July, I think I'm at like 42, 43.
So, let's say 42. I've got my calc let's see, my calculator here. So, 42 divided by 11 years.
Oh, 10. I'm at my 10th anniversary in February.
You're producing about almost four novels per
A year.
year.
Yeah, that's pretty average for me, four novels a year.
And the length, some of them, as you said, were as average about 450 words. Do all of them, or are some of them much shorter?
No, the only novella I wrote was the 1001, and that was about 60K. So it's still considered
60,000
a
words.
novella to me.
Do you mean 60,000 words?
Yes.
Okay.
But because what they do is they put it on a much larger book. All of the 1001 Dark Nights have the same look about them with slight subtle differences, like the title of the book and the author, but the rest have a cohesiveness. So they're much larger books. I want to say like 6 by 9 inches or 6 by 10. And they, so it's like 145 pages, but yet it's 60K. So
Yeah,
it's a different,
that's a big novella,
yeah,
60,000
they're big
words.
novellas, yeah.
So if you're kind of what is it, 3 hours a night you're immersed in reading, when are you writing? What's your regimen?
Well, I write full time. It's my full-time job. So when my kids are at school, and I'm lucky enough to have a husband that is, you know, we're true partners in raising our children. So I'm a late bird, so I sleep very late and I go to bed very like in the morning. So my usual bedtime's like 1 o'clock. I might get up at like 8, and he will have already taken the kids to school. So when I get up, I have my coffee. I can sit right down on my computer and start working on admin stuff, get awake, and then I'll spend usually an episode takes me anywhere from 3 to 6 hours, depending on the muse and if she's being kind. And if I don't have to do a lot of research. And I call them episodes because in the Kindlevella world, we release things almost essentially chapter by chapter. And it's nice because you're getting paid for your work in progress while writing. But I have a process that I want my readers to have the best possible product from me. So I write the episode one day, it goes to my editors and my five beta readers. And then my editor does it overnight, gets it to me the next day usually. My beta readers read it and give their feedback overnight. And then I make all those changes and then I post it. So it takes 3 days to release one episode every week. And I usually do two a week. So I'm working 6 days a week, but I also pick up my kids at 2 o'clock and then deal with kid stuff and then make dinner every night.
So how many hours a day?
That I write?
Yeah.
I would say I work probably 6 hours a day. Writing is not always the thing I do. It depends on the day, but I'm always working around 6 hours a day. And then the rest is domesticity.
So do you target a word count? Like I want to be producing X number of words per day. Is
I
does
think that puts limitations on your muse and on your storytelling. I write the scene. So I sit down in front of a computer every single time. I do not bring up my manuscript. I only read the last episode that I need to read to know where I am in the story, to just to refresh my brain and put me back in the headspace. And then I open up a blank sheet every time and I type it out, that scene exactly how I want it. And then that's what gets done, edited, and beta read. And then I just keep grinding like that until it's done. And then in between that, my publisher is sending me, like, once I've put it in a full book format, for example, I would say The Marriage Auction book one is probably 90K and it has 30 something chapters in it. So of those 30 chapters, they will format it, do their rounds of editing, another 3 rounds of editing. And so I have to be working on those manuscripts while I'm writing the new season. So that's why I say some of my day is writing, some of it's not. Not to mention, contracts for foreign discussions, my agent, my lawyers, my tax
Right.
accountant, and my assistant,
So,
marketing, TikToks. We try to do a little bit of everything.
So, for the person listening and saying to themselves, "Hey, she sounds really interesting. I'd want to check out her writing." What would your best entry point B? Is there a particular novel that you would say, if you want to know what I'm about, start here?
I mean, I would love people to find the book that catches their interest. So if you look me up on Amazon, I have Resisting Roots that was made into a passion flicks film. So it's kind of fun to go read a book then watch the movie. And that one's a sports romance, very more sweet, which is nice, but still erotic. That would be a good choice. Calendar Girl is what got me my status on the New York Times. And that is the book that's in 37 languages with probably 15, 20 million copies sold of that one. So a lot of people really like that one. And then, of course, what I'm writing now is always what I feel is the best thing I've ever written, and that's The Marriage Auction. And then, if you're a person who wants something more women's fiction, I did a 4-book series that is really considered women's fiction with romance. So that's kind of a genre thing is when you write, you're either writing romance, contemporary romance, paranormal romance, or say you're writing fantasy. Are you writing a fantasy romance or romantic fantasy? They're very different. What I wrote in women's fiction was women's fiction first. So there's really a journey and a message for the woman to soak their soul in. And then there's a wicked hot romance as part of it to keep you like, yeah, that's hot. Okay. All right. I like this. So you could always start with what the heart wants if you want something that's going to make you think and, fall in love a little bit differently.
Now you mentioned Resisting Roots and Passion Flicks, and the website Passion Flicks says if you love romance novels, this is the place to watch them come to life.
True.
Tell us about Passion Flicks.
Oh
I
God,
mean,
Passion
they.
Flicks is so cool. I'm going to their conference in Puerto Rico next week, actually, with a bunch of the other actors from my movie and from all the other movies and the other authors, and we get to meet readers and stuff. Super fun. Passion Flicks, their goal is to turn romantic novels into movies. And what they do is they find movies or stories that really are well suited for the screen, and they work with the author on every detail. Like, I reviewed the script. I made changes to the script. I picked out every single actor. I went on set. I moved to Georgia for a month just to be part of the production process. And it was such an experience, and it really taught me that in this world of movie making, what my portion would be. And I'm definitely more of a writer than I am a person who can do anything related to movies, because that is like another skill. But what I loved most about it is them turning my art into their art. And that was a really beautiful process to see that transition of and pairing of two different methods of storytelling coming to life was really beautiful. And I would love to do it again, and I would do it again. But yeah, it's PassionFlix is a subscription service. So just like if you're a member of Hulu, you can be a member of PassionFlix. I think it's like, I don't know, $5 a month. You can look it up at passionflix.com. And they make original movies from your favorite books. I think they've done like 30, maybe more already. And the director and owner of the company is Tosca Musk. She is the sister of Elon Musk and the daughter of Mae Musk, the 70-year-old supermodel. So
Gotcha.
she has a unique perspective on how she tells women's stories, especially as it pertains to sex. And it was funny because the first conversation we had about the movie, she was like, "All right, let's talk about how much nudity are we going to have?" And I was like, "Wait, what? Nudity?" And she's like, "Well, yeah, this is erotic, and you know, your story could be very erotic." And I was like, "Well, not really that comfortable with a lot of nudity. I would rather the user, reader, visual person, you know, use their imagination a bit." And so we kind of went with a Notting Hill type version for my story. It is
Hugh
subtly
Grant and
sexy.
Julia Roberts movie.
Yeah, we went subtly sexy. And Lou Ferrigno Jr., who is the Incredible Hulk's son, he's in SWAT and a few other cool movies, paired with Elizabeth Posey, did an amazing job projecting Genevieve and Trent in that series. And it was just so cool, Mike, to watch. And I think that seeing art being created is a powerful gift. So anybody who loves to watch movies that were made from books, this is the place you do it, PassionFlix.
So, how has your writing changed over the 10, 11 years that you've been writing novels? Can you,
I think I got
what's that?
I'd like to think I got better. I
Has
mean,
it,
sometimes, my
do you feel like
friend.
it's evolved in some way?
Yeah, I think I've evolved as I've aged. For one, my characters aren't so naive. They're definitely stronger willed. You know, the alpha tendencies, I love a good alpha just because it's a fantasy-based type thing versus reality. You know, if my husband tried to tell me what to do, you know, he would not be happy. He would not get what he wanted. But in books, you know, you can play with those role reversals and things. So I definitely am adding a bit more, like, for example, okay, something I like to add some taboo conversations to get people on one fence or the other. And as a Californian, I know you are too, the use of cannabis is not something that I see as a big deal in general. It's fully legal here in California. It's legal to use it, smoke it, have it on your site. It's just like basically buying booze. Well, I wrote in The Marriage Auction, one of my characters in season two, she owns a cannabis farm. And the comments I got from that was wild. And it was kind of fun to see the stigma is so saturated in other states in the nation, and they haven't evolved the way that we have in our thinking about medicinal use of cannabis or recreational
Or
use.
recreational. So
Yeah.
they were upset about it. They were
Yeah.
angry.
They were like, "I don't need you telling me to be using drugs." And I'm like, well, a lot of people use it for anxiety, me included. But I'm not one of those that's out there, you know, "Hey kids." You know?
Right. Yeah, and well, you've seen all the book banning going on. I mean, obviously these are not romance novels getting banned, but
I'm so against book banning in
yeah,
any way, shape,
it's
or form.
crazy. I mean, obviously there needs to be some supervision over what kids are reading, but
Yeah, and that's the parent's job. That
it's
is
like
the parent's
exactly.
job to know what your child is consuming, whether it be food, medicine, books, TV, other
Internet.
people. It is not up to the librarians, it's not up to the school system to decide where that line falls. We have in our federal government, a congressional board or whatever that decides what these schools are allowed to serve, and librarians are allowed to make those choices and what's right for their school, for their students. And I feel like we need to continue to empower these people to make good choices. And if you don't want your kid to read something, don't let them read it. But
Yeah,
don't tell me I
it's.
can't have my child read it. My kid's reading The Hunger Games right now.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean,
And I'm
they've.
fine with it. Those books were stellar. They were well written, incredible storytelling. Yeah, they're violent, and we have to have those conversations. But I've read the series before my kid read it. I know what my child's reading.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my advice when it comes to banned books. Don't ban books. You need to, if your kid wants to read something and you're not so sure, read it yourself or tell them no, you're not old enough.
Yeah, it's been like 5,000 or more books have been banned over the last just the last 2 years. It's
So
and
gross.
some
So
of them
gross.
are
And
the
some of them are
Handmaid's
really
Tale,
important, like
Margaret
the Andy
Atwood.
Thomas
Yeah,
book,
the A
Baby
Handmaid's
Gear.
Tale has been banned in some
What
schools.
book?
A Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, the one that's
Oh.
been made into that smash hit. I
Yeah,
think it's a
and we
Netflix
need that
series.
because we don't want to go back to, women as childbearers and nothing else.
Yeah, and that's
I mean,
it's almost yeah it's. That one
really,
really
that's
resonates.
misuse. It's a misuse of power, and it's a way to staunch open thought and for a way for everyone to really communicate and have these tough talks about what right and wrong look like.
Now, what was the turning point in your writing career? Now, obviously, 50 Shades of Grey was the spark
He's
that
my
got
spark.
you onto this career. And but once you were writing novels and romance novels, was there a point where there was another big turning point? Was it when that publisher
It
called you
was
and
when
said, we want to buy
Calendar
your
Girl hit.
backlog and all?
Yeah, it was when Calendar Girl hit the New York Times. It was like one, I would say I wrote the series as an indie author. And then I got a publisher about halfway through. So they started producing the monthly installments because I was challenging myself to write a novella. So in that case, it was like 40K. And to write it, have it edited and released in the same month. I did that for an entire year, Mike. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. But it was what got me the status that I got today. And the second that I had a publisher put money behind that series, it finished in December. It was like December 30 something. By Jan the first week of January, it was on New York Times. And out of nowhere, I was a New York Times bestseller. The week later, I was number one. And
Wow.
then like the week after that, I had seven books on the New York Times in the same week. It was absolutely insane.
That's the
And
thing about romance readers. Well, a lot of genre readers, but romance readers, they just devour books
they're
one after
voracious.
another.
We are voracious. We have TBR piles that will break your back, break your bank. I myself am a guilty of these things because I read solely on Kindle and I buy the print books. I can have my trophies.
Now, do you write in silence or do you have music playing? Is there what kind of environment do you create when you're writing?
I am a silent writer. So I come into my office and I don't have anything going. My dog usually hangs out with me, my big German Shepherd, and I just channel write. So I'm one of those people that forgets time and space. I literally live in the art, I live in the story. While it's happening, I don't get up usually for 3 straight hours unless like someone calls me or the door rings or something like that. And that's how it works for me. I just have to channel the characters in my mind. I watch the movie essentially in my mind and I transcribe it.
Interesting. So, how much do you? I mean, what do you consider your greatest strength with writing? Is it pacing? Is it dialogue? Is it characterization? Is it scene setting? What would you consider to be your standout strength as a writer?
I think it's relatability. I think the way I write relates to people, and it's as if your best friend is telling you a story versus, I don't have tons of purple prose with that flowery language. I'm very casual. I tell the story the way I want to hear it told to me. And I don't use too many, $5 words to muck up things, but I make it interesting as possible, but I really try to connect to the reader through what the characters are experiencing and make that relatable, something that they can believe in, something that they can aspire to, admire, understand, or put themselves in that character's shoes.
Now, well, do you outline your books or do you let them develop organically?
Usually I just have an idea. And I start with figuring out who my characters are. So I'll go, oh, this character is a brunette with brown eyes. So I will literally go search Google and I'll put in, sexy brunette actress, 20 years old, or male actor, Mexican American, 30 years old, dark hair, things like that. And I'll find an image, I'll print it out, I'll stick it on a board. I have a storyboard. And then I put post-its on their face of things I need to remember. Like if they have quirks, maybe they chew gum all the time, maybe they always smell like cedar, or maybe they crinkle their nose when they're lying. Little things like that. I just write it on a post-it so I don't forget, and I stick it on their face. And I always put their name, their height, their eye color, hair color. And that's primarily it. And then I just use the post-its, and I'm a pantser. I write what the muse wants to share, and somehow it eventually works out.
Yeah. Well, characterize your muse. Is your muse just, I mean, does it have any kind of shape or form, or is it strictly something that comes to you from a different dimension?
My muse is a bitch. My muse is very persnickety. If I am emotionally unwell, if I am not in a good mood, if I'm hurting over a trauma or I'm upset over something, I can't write. So that's a very irritating part of my writing process, is that if I don't feel joy or well, or just, kind of like I can't ever write when I'm drinking. I can't ever write when I'm smoking. If I smoke, I can't have anything like that. I have to be in a really healthy mental headspace to be able to write. And it's just because it's almost like my muse needs that calm, blank slate so that I can just go crazy with everything else and I'm not affected. But if in a situation I'm about to write a really hard scene, like a crying scene, or I'm gonna kill a character. Those I have to be in a really healthy headspace because I will eventually come out of that writing process down, spiraling, sad. Like, it's very a symbiotic relationship between my emotions and my muse.
Now, you attend book conferences, or did
Do
you
I'm
attend?
going to
You're
the
going to Passion Flicks,
ApollyCon
I
in
know.
April.
Which one?
A PolyCon, it's in Washington, D.C.
What's
And then
the
I
best?
signed up for Readers Take Denver next year in February. Usually everything's booked way in advance. And then I'm doing Passion Con next week. So, yeah.
So, is there one conference in particular that's the standout romance writing conference
No, for authors or for readers?
for authors?
Oh, for authors, not usually. The convention, not in that regard. So the conventions I attend are usually signings where I'm signing books along with 200 other authors that are signing. But the writers' conventions are things usually online, like Inkers Con. I want to say Alessandra Torre works on that one. Skye Warren has one that they have writing conferences where authors get together. Or you may do like a writer's retreat with, 5 to 10 authors that are kind of in your world and just have a kumbaya session, where you hash things out and talk it out with your peers.
So, to the aspiring novelist, romance novelist out there who either is just getting started or preparing to get started, what's your best piece of advice?
I personally took writing classes. So what I did was I went online and I found writing classes. Like I said, Alessandra Torre has writing classes. Book Genie has writing classes. The ones I went to were Gotham's writers out of New York, and I did it online. So it's so fun. And you can even take, if you even go to your local community college, in our area, we have Modesto Junior College, and they have creative fiction writing and novel writing classes. And I genuinely believe that if your goal is to become a writer, write a novel, take two or three classes just to get the vibe of how a story is told. I would recommend reading the book by Claire Dixon Lee. It's called The GMC of Writing. It's amazing. It talks about goal, motivation, and conflict. And those three things are needed in every single story. So you and in every facet. If you want to write a character, you need to know why that what that character's goal, motivation, and conflict is in that story. You need to know what her partner's GMC is. You need to know what the overarching story's goal, motivation, and conflict is. All of those things really matter towards telling a fluid tale that will enrapture your readers. And then you can look into other little things online, like the smaller things that authors maybe hold, and try something like that. But my first recommendation is always to read a ton of what you want to write. So if you want to write paranormal romance, just read paranormal romance. Read all the greats, read as much as you can, soak in that information. And don't be afraid to ask your friends and family to read your stuff and give you good feedback. Don't be afraid to join the Authors Guild and go to meetings that are around the world and have connection with people that are writing. It's going to be the best way to get your chops, to hone your chops into becoming a writer.
There you have it. My guest has been romance novelist Audrey Carlin, number one New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal best-selling author. And you heard the series Calendar Girl, 1001 Dark Nights, International Guy, The Marriage Auction, and so on. A lot of hot copy there. Audrey, thank you for taking the time and coming on the program. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. I've had fun. Everybody watch his podcast or listen to his podcast and check out all the authors on there. It's fun to connect in this manner. I really appreciate it.